Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Molly Idol, illustrator, animator, choreographer of Wordless Wonders. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 253 of the podcast with Molly Idol, author-illustrator most recently of Flora and the Peacocks, the third offering in her wordless picture book series about a girl and a company of birds. If you have not yet been acquainted with Molly's Flora books, I can't wait for you to explore the beautiful dance that occurs as you, the reader, interact with the story. It's something I marvel at every time I pick up one of Molly's books. Enjoy. Here's episode number 253 of the podcast with Molly Idol. Welcome back to the podcast, Molly Idol. I am so glad to be reunited with you.
I feel like we should like sing a 70s song now. Reunited. Anyway, yes, I'm
together,
so happy
to be here. Molly Idol, we are back. We are back.
Oh, that was a nice falsetto.
Well, thank you. I think when talking to a friend, the falsetto just comes right out, doesn't it?
Right.
Hey,
good stuff.
Welcome back, buddy. And thank you. Thank you, Chronicle. But thank you for coming back and sharing Flora and the Peacocks. I love Full Circle. We talked about this when I last talked to you, and now it's here. It exists.
Oh, my gosh, we did. And it is. It's a real book. Like, my after much strife and many feathers. Here it is.
I love it. Before we launch into what Flora and the Peacocks is, I want to bring back actually a part of our conversation because it's making me think about it right now. One of my favorite things that we talked about in regard to Flora and the Flamingo and the Penguins is that we talked about Penguin and Flamingo both, well, and Flora, that when you are reading a wordless picture book that has these flaps that you can manipulate, you, the reader, are the storyteller. You can leave flaps up or down. You can tell the story the way you want to. You can progress through the story at the pace you want to progress. And to have your two peacock characters being two competing forces, that it's not just Flora and a penguin and Flora and a flamingo, but now we have two peacocks in some ways competing for the attention of young Flora. It's quite a fun story to share that way.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. You know, threes are tricky, aren't they? I mean, for kids, for grown-ups, it doesn't matter. You get three people together, or a girl and two birds, and it's hard to make everyone feel heard and appreciated and included.
Let's sit on that comment for a minute. It's hard when you get a girl and two birds together to make everyone feel included.
You know, it's funny because I don't even think of them as birds, which is like crazy. I was telling somebody the other day, I was watching, we have these woodpeckers that have moved into our neighborhood, and they're not really indigenous, I don't think, to Phoenix. And I was just fascinated by them. And I was like, man, those are cool looking birds. You know, I should make a book with birds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. Because I feel like I start thinking of them as people. They're just characters who happen to have a lot of feathers.
I have a pitch. I have a pitch for the next Flora book for you to work on to go that way. And you should be, you should call it The Birds and Flora.
Okay.
And that can just be the, or maybe save it for the final Flora story, The Birds and Flora, and just all of the company that she that she attracts.
It sounds for a minute like a horrible, like, Hitchcock Flora.
The Birds!
The Birds!
Well, you could play with font and we could carry that out. That could work out.
We could make that happen.
well, Motley, to share in this story, I would love to share, to have a moment for you to talk about what the story of Flora and the Peacocks is, in your words.
Okay. Well, you know, it's so funny because there are no words in the book. So already I've used like infinitely more than are there. and I've said nothing. I think for me, this book was about exploring the dynamic that happens when you have more than one friend. My boys are getting older now, and it seems like the older you get, the tougher, ironically, it is to maintain balance. It's tough for small kids too, but I just noticed that push and pull that happens. You know, you want to be liked best, right? You know, like, because everybody wants to have the best friend and to feel like they make that total connection. But yes, you can have more than one friend. Sometimes you can even have more than one best friend, and it doesn't make your friendship with your other friend any the less. You know, there's room for everybody, but it's hard to make everybody feel that all the time. And this story just explores the dynamics that can happen when you're in that situation.
I like that from, well, the book sort of plays this beautiful trick on the reader in the way that on the cover we see indeed that there are two peacocks, but when the story is set, when we open to the title page and then turn to the first page, we see, well, on the title page, you just see Flora and her fan coming out, and then that being mirrored in peacock feathers, which I love the symmetry there. But on the first page that we can interact with, where we can, Flora's holding her fan before her face and we can flip it down and see her.
Yes.
But then to flip down the peacock feathers and realize, as soon as you touch, you realize, because I think it's glued together or fashioned together in such a way that it looks as if it's one bird. So to flip down and see that there are indeed two different birds there is such a wonderful way to set the stage, because already it becomes, it almost becomes different groupings, that there's going to be, someone's already left out. Not that Flora is left out in a negative way, but she is apart from these two peacocks. And as it continues, it becomes that dance of one of these individuals always sort of being apart.
Yes. Yeah. And that was important for us to, I felt like, to establish from the beginning that they were together, but already separate, even the birds. You know, we could have made that flap one large flap.
Yes.
Like Flora's fan, so that the only way you can manipulate it is to show them both. But it seemed important to show even then that there was just this sliver, that they were individual. So that they, even though their pose was identical, they were separate.
Yes. And that sort of, the way that a child, when reaching for, or an adult in my case, is reaching for that first flap, and the flap comes apart, and it is two halves, it allows a sort of surprise there. And I like that the surprise is that these two birds are facing one another. So it almost is, to me, as if to say, we have all we need. We have each other.
Yep,
we're good. Yeah.
And they are all good. Yeah. You know, but could it be all better? Possibly.
Yes.
And that was something that I was set on, you know, when I start to work on these it's sort of like I just start drawing and I have an idea of where I want to end up and I know where I want to start. And then, oh, there's the middle to work out. And I try and go through. But something that I knew was that we needed to explore in the story arc every combination of the three, like every dynamic. Everybody at some point needed to feel left out, and every pairing that was possible needed to happen so that there was always somebody who was the odd man out.
Yes.
And then the pair, and then trying to wrap that up together at the end. And so knowing that had to happen, that helps dictate the choreography, knowing you have to get from one point to the next to the next. And so it sort of gives stepping stones to hop to.
There it is. I was waiting for that word to come out, because that is another thing, I think, if I recall, that we talked about in the last conversation as well, this choreography, this dance that you're doing on the page, and the way that, again, the reader can take part in the choreography and the way that the characters play out this story.
Yeah, and it was definitely more challenging this time. I did not at all anticipate it being more challenging. I thought, well, we go from a duo to a trio, and here we go.
Yeah.
But this is where I have to, like, sing the praises of working with the folks at Chronicle, which I always do because I love working with them, and they make amazing books. But, you know, obviously having made the first two books that were identical in trim size, and when you're working on a series, there's just a lot to be said for keeping everything, like, sort of fitting in the same box, so to speak, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And for longer than I'd care to admit, I tried and failed to make this book work in an 8x10 format, like the previous books. And periodically my editor, Kelly, and my art director, Christine, would, you know, send me a little message and say, so how's it going? And I'd say, oh, it's fine. And I was just the biggest fibber, because it was not at all fine, but I was just sure that I could make it work. I just hadn't found the right way. And, you know, I think we have to get to this point, you know, when you're working, and then you have to be honest with yourself when it's not working, you know. And I came into the house from the workshop one day and told my husband, that's it, it won't work. I can't fit these huge birds that are basically these huge horizontal birds in this vertical space. And I've been trying for months. And my husband says, why don't you just turn the book on its side?
Oh, yes.
And I was
okay.
Like, oh, are you kidding? I was like, no, you can't. Can you? It was like one of those light bulb moments. So I called Christine, my art director, and said, I think I know the problem. I think I know why it's not working. We need to change the trim size of the book. And I know there are a zillion reasons why we shouldn't, but the reason why we should is that that's the way to make this book, you know, and to make this the best book it can be. And she said, well, hang on. Maybe we could work out a different trim size. What if we made it square? And it was one of those moments where, you know, when you collaborate with people and having the extra opinions make it so much better than it could ever have been on your own. Because we could have just made it suddenly like a 10x8 book instead of 8x10. But when Christine said, what if we made it square so that it was still as tall as the other books, but you get the extra width? And what was so brilliant about that was all the birds' tails are this semicircular flap. But, you know, when you move the flap, you've essentially like filled in that circle. You're utilizing a circular space by maneuvering their flaps. And to put the circle in the center of a square,
I was just going to say,
just like,
yeah.
Oh, it was like lights shining from the clouds. Oh, you know, it will work. And it was like, I don't know, it was just a matter of weeks after that I had the sketches finished. I mean, once I had the right space and everybody had room to move around, it just worked. But I have to ask myself why I was like so convinced that it had to be one way. And I know that it was, you know, for marketing and sales reasons and all that good stuff to make the books line up nicely. And,
oh, okay.
You know, and how awesome that the folks at Chronicle were like, you know what? I mean, marketing and sales, it's important, but that all is only really to support a book that works, you know, a book that can be the best it can be. And so we need to make this book the way this book needs to be made.
Yeah.
And that is awesome to have the backing of people who are like, do it, do what you need to do, you know? And it's always, each book has been that way when we've reached some sort of, we don't know how to do it. Oh, we've found the way, but it's going to be like really complicated logistically or financially. And hands down, every time they say, we just have to do what we have to do to make it the way it needs to be. that's awesome to have that kind of support.
Yes, it's Tim Gunn. Make it work.
Right?
The spine, I mean, there are a couple of things that are also different about it, because, and this is because of one of the, I don't want to give it away, but one of the features in the book, right? One of the features in the book causes the book to be thicker. So your spine is a lot thicker in this book too.
Yes. Yeah, it looks massive. It does. Like, wow, I had no idea the book was like that.
When I picked it up, I was like, holy cow, did they give me two? What is this?
I felt the same way. Wow.
But let's go back, because I had... you talked about the circles, making these beautiful circles in the middle of a square, right?
Yes.
That also happens to be my boy's favorite page, because that is the tushy page. Do you want the tushies to be up, or do you want them to be covered? Hey, look, I can make the tushies come up. I'm doing it now as we talk, just so you know.
That makes me so happy, because my boys, they say the running gag at our house is somebody will say, you know what? And you'll say, what? Peacock butt.
Yeah. My kind of boys. All right.
That's right. I mean, you put a rear end in there, it's going to get a laugh.
It's perfect. Okay. So let me pour on some love, and then I have to call out there's a spread here that I need to call out that is just so moving to me. But couple things. One, I love that the plants that are in this, it looks like a weeping willow to me. That kind of a tree right in the background just sort of feels like this beautiful curtain that's there the entire story, and I like that, the wispiness of them flowing, and it makes me want to almost flip the pages quickly to see the breeze, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad because that was many, many little leaves, but yeah, I wanted them to move and sort of mimic the direction of
The fan of their tails.
Yes, exactly.
And the fan of Flora's fan. That's definitely a thing. And I got to see, maybe because I just started really paying attention to you when you were sharing on Facebook or Instagram or wherever your art, I got to see the way that you do this art with your colored pencils. And I knew that was a thing. We talked about that. But to see a peacock halfway done and know that, like, oh no, she really is doing that with pencils was really neat, because I know you've heard me say before, but your line is masterful. It's got so much beautiful movement, and I love Flora's beautiful round shape from that soft, her cheeks and head, just everything down to her hips and the way that her feet point. I love her shape. I love the person that she is. She's just a beautiful character, and all of your lines are so they speak so strongly of different emotions, and I know that part of that comes from your background in animation, but also I think, Molly, what I didn't say last time is that now that I've absorbed more of your art this way, I think part of it just comes from you have a command over the line that you draw that is so strong in your ability to tell a story that we don't need words in this case, that your line alone is what is sharing the emotion in the story for us. And it's a beautiful talent that you have, Molly.
Oh, you are very kind to say so. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you very much.
I love, so here's the spread I wanted to talk about, because this is, this goes back to that emotion. We've seen Flora experience jealousy and hurt and different feelings like that in mm-hmm. with the flamingo and the penguin. But in this story, I really see her experience this like turmoil that I haven't seen before in the spread. And I love it. The spread in particular that I couldn't move on from. We talked about how the reader can manipulate the page and move on when they want. There's a page where, so to paint the picture for readers, Flora has a fan, and these two peacocks, we see the fan mimicked in the shape of their tails, but then one of the peacocks wants the fan, and we get on this particular spread that I really love, the two peacocks are fighting, tugging this fan that it really feels like as soon as she gets it out of one's mouth and her arm goes flying back that way, it goes immediately into the other one's mouth, to the extent that Molly, for me as a reader, I think I got trapped in that spread going like, how do I fix this? Every time I flip one way, the other peacock grabs it. And then realizing like, oh wait, it's a book. Molly is keeping me safe. I can just turn the page. But there was a moment that I was really in that book. I was really in that story with her, going like, how do I escape this torment?
Oh, that's actually, it feels weird to say that one of my favorite moments in drawing this book was to make them so angry.
Yes.
The peacocks, like to really, to see that feeling. And we had a lot of discussions when we were going over sketches about, like, were they too angry? Was that scary? You know, was that too scary? And I just really felt it was important that it not feel like it was a play, you know, that it not feel like it was being put on for us,
yes.
That they really felt this way, because I think kids can take it. And this sort of thing happens all the time. You know, you have my toy or you were playing with my friend and I am angry about that. And I think while it may feel unsettling to explore that, it's far safer to explore it in this way and have time to reflect on it than when you're in the moment of something like that happening to you. You know, it allows you to sort of put yourself in it and go, what would I do? How would that feel? And it's hard to do that in the moment when something like that is happening to you.
Yes.
But better when you're able to absorb it in a book, for sure.
It's a safe place to experience that. I brought the book in for my students to see as well. And that, you sort of know that this is going to happen. But when they have that fight and then there's a resolution to the fight, whether you like this resolution or not as a reader, there's a resolution to that fight on the next page. And it made my students gasp. And you knew that it was going to happen. But it was great. I mean, they were just like, almost right. The betrayal of then the characters, like, what did you do? We thought you were these beautiful characters and you were all together. And I think, to me, it's always that moment of, that gasp is always, I see myself in that situation, which is why I'm gasping. It's an empathy gasp. I think we all have it, all adults. I think everyone has that. When we gasp, that's why we do it, because we have such a strong empathy for our characters or for the people we watch on TV or shows or whatever, that's what that is coming out. And you have built that deep empathy there for those characters, whether they've experienced it or not, or sympathy, I suppose, in that case, whether they've experienced it or not, they know that feeling when that result happens.
Right. And I feel like, I hope that, like, the gasp, that's if peacocks could gasp, I don't know. Do they go, you know, but I feel like they feel the same way. Like they instantly know they went too far.
Yes.
You know, like we all do. You go too far and then, oh, like, you know it the minute, you know, like whether it's an unkind word or deed, like, you know it. But I guess my dad was always saying when I grew up, you can't unring a bell, you know, like it's, you've done it now. That's now you have to deal with the consequences.
Right. And I can't unring a bell. Goodness. Yeah, that's the phrase, isn't it? The resolution is beautiful and is what it needs to be. And I'm glad that there, for the way the book resolves, I'm glad there was time. I'm glad that wasn't the end, nor did it wrap up quickly, that there were several spreads, several page turns to let us get to that point. But then the denouement was, like, held out really well. It wasn't fast. It was just sort of, it was allowed to sit there, right?
Yeah, literally.
It was, yes, yeah.
I think that the pacing is the toughest part.
I'm positive
with any book,
it. Yes.
With any book. And this ending was especially tough to figure out. Well, we knew what the very end would be. From pretty early on.
Yes.
But to get from that moment of, like, total, like, we have hit bottom.
Yes.
To get to there and to figure out how to do that, that took the longest time. And there's something sort of, I don't know, poetic is the right word, but it does. Making amends is what takes the longest time. And it took me literally the longest time to figure out how to make them make amends. But I think, you know, it takes only a moment to hurt someone's feelings and then a long time to earn their trust back. And so there was something, I like the way the making of this book mirrored what this book was about.
Yes, I agree. I think you did beautiful work, Molly. And I'm so impressed
Go on.
Well, I'm so impressed too that you are able to live with this character and experience so many different things with her to share with us that still feel new and still feel like discovery. And I know that I think you're finished with it, I think, if I remember you saying it right, but that Flora and the Chicks is your next book, right? Is that what the title is?
Yes, it is. And it's a board book.
Oh, cool.
And it's a counting book.
Oh.
And so I guess not words technically, but numbers and
chicks.
And now I'm starting on the companion to that, which is Flora and the Ostrich, which is going to be an opposites board book.
Cool.
It felt like a really wonderful transition to make for Flora, to try and handle some concepts. We've been handling concepts to deal with friendship.
Yes.
And to sort of expound upon that and handle friendship and another component was something I was really keen to try. And it turned out to be this wonderful adventure. And I'd never made a board book before. And it took so much longer than I thought it was going to take.
Well, I was going to ask, it's fewer pages at least, right?
Yes.
And have the other Flora books been, can they be made into board books?
I suppose they could, but
it might not work
the
same. Yeah.
Well, and the delicacy of them. I mean,
yes,
as much as we try to design and engineer them to be as durable as possible, when you're talking about a board book, it's even smaller hands,
exactly,
you know, who are dealing with them. And so,
and mouths.
And mouths, absolutely. It's not loved till it's chewed upon. That's a fact.
I like Flora. She's my favorite tasting book.
Yes. My boys went through 3 copies of Sandra Boynton's Dinosaurs Bingit. Like, literally loved it to pieces.
Oh.
And that's a mark of a good book. But we knew going in, like, we wanted it to be interactive, but it couldn't be in the same way. And I don't want to give it away, but we did find a way to utilize the motion and still make it very durable.
That's great. That's exciting to know that it's 2 board books too. Is that something that you then like pitch to Chronicle? Hey, I want to take Flora this way, but we might have to do it with a different format.
Well, you know, we were talking about just what else we could do with Flora. There's a matching game that's coming out the same day.
I saw on your page. That's so cool. You have a matching game with your characters. I don't even believe that.
Fun at parties. it's like unreal, you know, to think about merchandising. But, you know, they said, so what ideas do we have? And we just had this huge brainstorming session. And one of the things that I shared was that I had these 2 ideas about Flora and Chicks. And Flora and an ostrich. And I knew, you know, that the Chicks was going to be about sort of how do you cope with, well, not just 2 friends, but if you have, say, 10 friends, if you have a large group, you know, how to keep everybody together. What if Flora is in charge? It's sort of, you know, what happens when you're left in charge of your younger siblings and wackiness ensues. And I had this other idea for Flora and the ostrich where she would try and make friends with somebody who was very shy.
Okay.
But I said to them, you know, I don't know. They still need more work because neither of the ideas in my mind would support like a 40-page picture book as the traditional books. And they said, well, what about a board book?
Oh,
because
great.
These are really more concept. And I said, well, that would be ideal. And so then we decided to make those.
Let me tell you I, being also a reviewer on the side, Chronicle makes some really good board books.
Right. So I said, guys, I've never made a board book.
Yeah.
And they were like, we'll send you some samples.
Yes. Like, oh, you got them. Wow.
Oh, man. Like, great. Oh, board books arrived at my house. So I just immersed myself.
Jeez.
Like finding out what was possible, you know, what had been done and what you could do. And there are so many amazing board books out there. And I had no idea like what what you could do. And you know how we were talking before we started recording about how sometimes things just work out,
yes.
You know, and better to be lucky than good sometimes. And we were trying to figure out how to engineer the finale of Flora and the Peacocks. And I knew what I wanted it to do, but I had no idea how to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not a paper engineer.
Right.
But in one of the board books that Chronicle sent me, there was a flap that it sort of worked the inverse of the way we ended up using it in the Peacock book. But I said, oh, if I just turn this around and like inside out, that would make it. And it was like, I wasn't even looking at that book for that,
oh,
but it
wow.
just like, you know, just need that like little, that like spark of inspiration to go, oh, now I know what to do. And so I love it when things work out like that.
I love when you see something and it unlocks in your brain the way to, for example, manipulate or engineer another thing. I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And that is, for me, that's always the toughest part.
Yeah.
Because I work so much two-dimensionally that even just to fold the paper and work in, like, the third dimension in that very limited way. There's a really great Far Side cartoon with the guy who's, like, raising his hand in class. And he says, my brain is full. And that's how I feel when I work on these flaps. You know, like, oh, my brain, it's sprained. But it's such a wonderful challenge. I love that. I love creating a problem that then I have to figure out how to solve.
And I'm glad that that's the way that you approach all of your books, but especially these Flora books, because they feel that way. They feel like a problem that has been solved. And because when we then get to be the reader experiencing the story, we get to experience the feeling of, well, how is this going to work? Or there's a discovery piece to it that feels like you played, you discovered this, you figured it out. Now you get to let us play and discover as well. And it's a really playful quality that I'm glad that you are able to keep that sort of voice, that sort of quality in the books when you create them.
Oh, good. Me too.
Super fun.
I'm glad it comes across that way. That's fantastic.
I think it's super fun. I love the idea too that you have days that some days going to work for you is playing with glue and folded paper and your brain hurts when you're done.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Me and the double sticky tape. We're like,
oh,
this.
There you go.
My fingers are stuck together. It's like, no, it's so much fun. And I just start, I always think like there's going to be some totally organized way in which I can work all this out, but it's always just me like hacking at bits of paper and yeah. like crumpling them up. Nope, not that way. Oh wait, what if I did this, gluing things together? And then thank goodness for a good team who can like look at my clumpy, gluey, taped together mess and be like, ah, we see what you mean. I think we can work that out.
Well,
and that, you know, yeah. we actually, there were times we put together the mock-up and while I thought it would work, you know, like it works one way in your head. And then when you see it, you go, that's not how I thought it would be. And so much kudos to like, we literally were like ripping like the mocked up book apart and going, nope, tell the printer, stop. There's another way. There's a better way. And it's good that at some point they put the brakes on me because I could keep tweaking forever.
Yes. Good editor, good team to be able to stop you and be able to hone in on, when is it there, right? Because it's sometimes hard to know when is it there and when are we pushing too far on it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And when it really does make a difference or when it's just me. Because we have to be honest, you're like sometimes, you know, like sometimes it's just like the artistic temperament. At least for me it is. Like, oh, it could be better. And they're like, it's fine. You know, like, and it's better than fine. I don't know. You know, like often at school visits, I get asked like, what's your favorite book or what's your favorite project? And I always say the next one.
Yes.
Because anything is possible, you know, like, well, and it's in your head. It can still be the best thing ever, you know?
Yeah.
And at some point you have to like stop and move on to the next thing. And that's the hardest part to say when, and know that you've done your level best and it's time to move on.
Boy, but to be in front of those kids, they tell you, don't they? Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. They tell you you've done your best. They love that.
I almost did a coffee spit take. They're like, yes. Yes. There is no, like playing to an adult audience, you know, everybody will nod and smile and clap politely. And kids are like, you either got it or you don't. And yeah. I love that. I wouldn't want it any other way.
No.
You want to know you got them honestly. That they are into it.
You're working for the best people, the best audience for sure.
To be sure.
Well, Molly, I'm so thankful for our time together tonight. As always, it flew by.
I know.
But I'm excited that we get to see each other soon, too. Actually, we'll see each other prior to this going up. But thank you.
Oh, this is like a weird, trippy, like, time travel. Like, so
it is.
I can tell you thanks for dinner next week, which will be in
last
3 weeks. And yeah.
Thanks for dinner next week, which will be last week when you hear this. You're right. Totally.
Fantastic. I'm sure we had a good time then, too.
I think you were excellent company, as always.
Oh, Matthew, thank you so much for having me on tonight. This is great.
Molly, before I let you go, I want to give you the last word by bringing it back to my library. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning, and I'd love to know what message you would like me to bring them from you.
Ooh. Well, first, tell them hi. and after that, I would say it's going to seem funny because these books are all about wordlessness, but my advice would be, if you think about saying something nice to somebody, don't just think about it, say it. It really makes such a difference. You will never ever regret a kind word being spent, I think.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if... Coming up on the podcast, Gail Atkinson returns to share Explorers of the Wild, his newest picture book. And after that, Andy Griffiths visits to share the 52-story Treehouse, the fourth book in his wildly successful illustrated novel series with Terry Denton. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.